A few weeks ago, I was chatting with another maker online and mentioned that I had discussed our strategy for using both Etsy and our own website in selling our ceramics with Cara Terra on a podcast episode. She asked for a link to that episode, and then I realized, actually, in fact, that conversation is scattered amongst a number of conversations throughout many episodes, and not just in one easy-to-find singular link. So, naturally, here we are, making that singular link right now. Welcome back for another solo episode from our The Launch series, where I dig into the firsthand experiences Francesco and I are having in starting our own ceramics business. It's not entirely a progressive series, so don't worry if this is the first time you're hearing about it. There's no need to hit pause and scroll back right at this moment. However, if you get to the end of this episode and you do want to start back from the beginning, episode number 406 is where we kick it all off, and I'll link to that in the show notes to make it quick and easy. But anyway, back to the point. Etsy versus websites. It is a question I see endlessly online. And often when I see it asked, the responses in the comments are flooded with either how horrible Etsy is, followed immediately by someone actually saying how much money they've made on Etsy and how they wouldn't have a business without it, and then followed again by someone saying, you absolutely must have your own website if you're going to actually do this thing. No questions asked. Back and forth, the argument goes. Needless to say, it's not only a bit confusing, it's downright unhelpful. Much like anything else in life, there are pros and cons to either option. And we're going to dig through those pros and cons right after a brief word from our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by the Rosenfield Collection of Functional Ceramic Art. The collection exists as an online source for research and inspiration, featuring photos of objects made by over 1,000 artists. The images are high quality and can be used with no permission required, making them a great source for students and teachers. To find out more, visit www.rosenfieldcollection.com. This episode is also sponsored by the Archie Bray Clay Business, home of Bray Patch, a ceramic patching material that is best used for filling cracks and bonding breaks. Bray Patch can be applied to either green or bisqueware and fired up to cone 10. It fires paper white, but can be tinted using your chosen clay body and be covered by opaque glazer slip. Order anytime, online, at archiebrayclay.com. Now, on with the show. Welcome to The Maker's Playbook, the show where we talk all about what it's really like to make a living from the things you make. I'm your host, seasoned entrepreneur of 14 years, Rebecca Ikes Cara. Okay, so Etsy versus your own website. A lot of people talk about this as a question that is either or. Either you choose Etsy or you choose your own website. But spoiler, that's not what we're doing, and I don't think one is exclusive to the other. We use Etsy for the largest benefit Etsy can provide us. Access to a very large audience of people that come onto their website on a daily basis. According to my robust research, in other words, the very first result in Google when I searched average number of Etsy users, apparently, Etsy had 97.3 million active buyers worldwide in 2023. Meanwhile, our email list for Cara Terra specifically has almost 200 people. So, yeah, there are a few more customers on Etsy than our own website right now. However, as has been pointed out plenty of times, Etsy is rented internet real estate. We have no control over what they decide to do with the algorithm. And if they suddenly decide they want to shut down our shop, they can do so without warning, as has happened to other makers. And we'd have no access to those 97 million customers. So it's not exactly the safest way to grow a business long term. That's why we don't actually send anyone to Etsy. I want you to hear that again. We do not send anyone to our Etsy shop. Etsy purely brings us sales. In that little How Shoppers Find You section of the Etsy stats page, as of the day of my writing this episode, it's showing Etsy brought 90% of visits. And the other 10% that Etsy thinks we brought directly, what they're classifying as direct, is actually showing as coming from Pinterest. And let me tell you, I have done zero work on Pinterest for our ceramics business. So that means someone who visited our shop, saved a photo of one of our listings onto their Pinterest board, and now that pin is bringing people to our shop as well. So one more time, we are doing zero active work to bring people to our Etsy shop. Now I'll explain later how we first got these Etsy eyeballs on our listings, but hang tight for just a minute on that. My point here is that the audience we are working our butts off to grow by participating in shows and markets, by paying for advertising in a local magazine, by sending out regular email newsletters, and by learning from experts like Allie Mason, who was just on the previous episode, how to grow our Instagram following in a meaningful and sustainable way. All of these best practices that you've heard me talk about here on the podcast so much, the only links that you will find in any of those places to send people to buy our ceramics are going to be links that send them to caratera.com, our own website. If I'm doing the work to find and grow an audience of interested buyers, I'm not sending them to the rented real estate of Etsy, where they can easily forget why they even came to the site in the first place, get distracted by something else entirely, some object with a really silly pun on it that still makes us all laugh, and wind up buying something from another shop instead of my own. Or worse, completely forgetting our shop or our business name. Because here's the kicker. No one remembers our shop name on Etsy. They remember that they bought a mug that they love to use every day on Etsy. So they go back to, you guessed it, Etsy. They don't necessarily go back because of Caratera. And frankly, our shop name isn't even our business name on there because of SEO and a bunch of other stuff. I'll explain that later. If you don't believe me on this, I want you to pay attention to people's responses if you see someone wearing a cute shirt with a clever phrase on it, or actually more likely a kitchen towel that has something really funny on it. If you ask a friend where she bought those matching glass containers with silly names for Q-tips and cotton swabs that are in her bathroom the next time you're over there, stuff like that. Do they tell you they bought it from a specific named store that they found on Etsy? Or does she just say she got it on Etsy? Because honestly, even I'm guilty of this. The people that we are meeting in person, however, at our local farmers market or an art festival, those people remember us. They remember Rebecca and Francesco. And hopefully they remember the business name if we're lucky. Okay, let's be honest. They actually just remember Francesco. I mean, what American woman doesn't fall for a European accent? Am I right? I'm only half joking, actually. Anyway, the point is, the audience we are growing ourselves and meeting directly whether that be in person or virtually via social media, those people never interact with our Etsy store. This is why I said earlier that our Etsy store doesn't even have our business name in the searchable store name, because if they remember our business name, if they took a business card from meeting us at a market and then they type Cara Tara into the Google search, we don't want Etsy coming up first. And that website has been around a lot longer than our own website, so it was coming up first. But I digress. The point is, I'm not going to lose the fees to Etsy if Etsy hasn't done any of the work to earn those fees. And while I don't love losing those fees anyway, honestly, it's just the cost of doing business and can be filed under a marketing budget. It's the cost of having access to 97 million people. And given at this point, we get almost one sale per day, roughly speaking, on average, simply by having listings active that we've got ranking in their searches, well then those fees are a cost worth paying, because that's about as passive of an income as it gets when we are making a living from the things that we make. It's maybe not a sustainable living, it's not paying an entire salary, but it's still something, all right? Now, I feel like I have said the word Etsy for what feels like 97 million times, so let's dig into our own websites for a minute, shall we? I'm going to take a small detour just for a minute to simply say, please stop stressing over which website platform to use. Because once again, it's not a question of right or wrong, good or bad. There is not one platform that is going to guarantee you more success over the other. Frankly, the best platform for you to use is the one that you can get up online the fastest. It is the one that you hit publish on the fastest and start telling people that your website actually exists. Of course, Shopify has a ton of extra bells and whistles and features specifically for e-commerce. Absolutely, they do. And when I spent a few months hyper-analyzing the website platforms out there, my research also led me to deciding that Shopify was the best way to go. That is, until I actually started trying to use the darn platform. And as a graphic designer who built her first ever website over 14 years ago using Dreamweaver and HTML, as clunky as that was in the day, I can confidently say I am pretty darn comfortable working my way around a website design platform. But holy heck did I hate Shopify. Now don't get me wrong, there are plenty of makers out there who are very happy with their Shopify stores. If you have one and you love it, please, oh please, do not take what I'm saying to mean that you need to go change websites. Don't fix it if it ain't broken, my friends. If it's working for you, awesome. But for me, the designer in me wanted control. And I wanted to be able to make changes to templates and changes to spacing in between sections and images and the letting of the text and a lot of other seemingly simple things I could do on other platforms that were impossibly frustrating to do on Shopify. I mention this because if you also have been endlessly researching website platforms, debating about doing your own website or doing Etsy, and then choosing your own website and which platform to choose, and you think you should be using Shopify, but are so overwhelmed by the whole thing that months later you actually still haven't published your website, well, my friend, this is permission to jump ship. Pick a different hosting site. It is okay. Because while one platform, like Shopify, might have all of those bells and whistles of abandoned cart emails and automated follow-up sequences and heaps of other e-commerce best practices that I, yes, of course, agree with, are you really going to use all of those features when you're just getting started? I had to have this real talk with myself, frankly, because I agree with all those best practices and those features and those bells and whistles. I know what makes them great. But if we've only got 10 people coming to our website on a good day, well, I don't really need all of them yet. When you're just getting started, what you need is to have a website that is published with maybe listings of your work, maybe an about page with a photo of your face. Yes, I said it. That's not a maybe. If you have an about page, please, oh please, for the love of all that is good in this world, have a photo of your face. And a contact page with an email address. You don't even have to have a fancy form on a contact page. Just type your email address in there. Frankly, just to get started, we could have the pots and the contact page. Heck, it could even be all on one page. Do not overcomplicate this. Websites are ever-changing things, and you can always update it. In fact, I promise you, you will always update it. First and foremost, what you need is an active link to put in that Instagram bio, and the faster you can do that, the faster you can start telling people it exists. The faster you start telling people it exists, the faster you start having your own audience and relying less and less on the fickle platforms like Etsy and Instagram. Right? Now, to answer the question I know you're all wondering, because I mentioned website platforms, the platform we wound up using for Carretera was Wix, which frankly, I was shocked by. No diss to Wix, but back in the day, it was not exactly a legit platform. As it turns out, they have come a very long way. And most of all, it was easy to set up for me. At the time, I was still photographing weddings full-time, so I also was attracted to the fact that I could do everything we needed in one place. The website, the email marketing, in-person sales, actually, and even invoicing for our custom restaurant orders. All done in the same platform. Now, that's not to say Wix is the only platform that does all of those out there. It's just the one I chose. Because on the flip side, the Maker's Playbook website and my photography website for Rebecca Marie Photography, both of those are actually built on Squarespace, which is also pretty quick and easy to get set up. Now, I don't love their pricing strategy for the email marketing component, so I didn't want to bother with it when setting up Carretera. There are plenty of other options out there. And while I know most of us ask these questions like, what platform should I use for my website? Because in our core, what we're really hoping for is a quick, straightforward option so that we don't have to put any more energy into it. Well, my friend, the actual answer that will actually serve you the best is almost always, it depends. You have to weigh the pros and cons for yourself. If you don't enjoy designing things the way I do, maybe you'll love using a Shopify template and hate the freedom Wix provides. If syncing up forms on a Squarespace site to an email provider like Google or MailChimp or Flowdesk sounds crazy overwhelming and way too technical, maybe you'll love Wix. I can't answer these things for you. And neither can that massive Facebook group who apparently will fight to the death to prove that their decision is the right one. In reality, it's all a matter of pros and cons. Now let's get a little pragmatic here. The issue of inventory. How in the world do you manage inventory if you're selling on multiple platforms? If you like this concept of selling on Etsy but also having your own website. Well, number one, to be frank, remember, Francesco and I make utilitarian, minimalist, functional wares. In other words, we really enjoy being production potters. There are very few one-off, one-of-a-kind pieces in our lineup. So we don't need to worry about a one-of-a-kind piece selling on Etsy at the same time that it might sell on our website because we don't typically have anything like that. And when we do have pieces like that, We mostly keep those for markets to sell in person, rather than go through all of the work of creating a listing once for that one thing. If a mug sells on Etsy and our website and at a market all at the same time, we most likely have three of them. That being said, we also do not put everything on Etsy. Our website is the better place to purchase things, in part for a reason. We might test out new items on Etsy just to see the level of interest because the audience is so much bigger, and so we can gather a lot more data a lot faster. But at the same time, we also mostly keep 3 to 4 items on Etsy that have proven to be popular to their audience specifically, and leave it at that. Etsy's ideal audience is not the same as our ideal audience. We aren't putting up a $20 spoon rest onto Etsy when the shipping of that spoon rest is probably going to cost us at least $8, if not more, and that's before Etsy takes their fees. It just doesn't make any sense. Now, if we did make one-of-a-kind pieces, this exact strategy can still work by using one of the services out there to potentially sync inventory across platforms. There's a bunch of options out there, so this is where you maybe need to go Google and type in whatever website platform you use, plus Etsy, plus inventory syncing. Or frankly, skip Google and come join the community, because deep dives on options like this are exactly what that space is for. And just this past Monday, I saw a member post, literally, "Thank you so much for this info. You've saved me from having to research." But I digress. That being said, while you can post one-off items on Etsy and use an inventory syncer, getting the kind of traction that we have with our own listings right now, where Etsy is driving traffic to us, is going to be a lot harder. Because once that one singular item is sold, your listing disappears. So any work you put into getting that listing to rank in search, any keyword research you did, the title you've chosen that has a bunch of keywords in it, the description, the tags, all of these things that are there to help you get your listing ranking, well, you're gonna have to start all over again every time you make a new listing for a one-off piece. So what I would suggest instead, if you do want to use Etsy for something like this, is having repeating shapes. Something like the same size mug or the same size vase over and over again, but maybe the shape is a little bit different, maybe the surface treatment is a little bit different, maybe the glaze is different, but the overall volume of the mug, for example, is still always 12 ounces. This way you can keep the listing active, but update the options. Change out the photos, link different options to the photos based on the color maybe, rather than creating different listings for every option. Now this is getting a little bit into the weeds on Etsy strategy, and that's probably a completely different episode for the podcast for another day. So let's get back to the pros and cons. Etsy pros. There's a large audience. If you're starting out and don't have access to a lot of people to sell your work to, it is a great way to get yourself seen and out there. Etsy Pro, they automatically remit sales tax, which means they automatically pay the sales tax every time you have an order, which means you don't have to do it. Honestly, this fact right here, if you're mostly making what you make as a hobby and you simply want to get the inventory out the door because you don't have that much stored space, but your full salary is maybe from another job and so your taxes currently are pretty easy to file because you get a W-2 if you're in the US, the fact that Etsy does all the sales tax stuff is a really big pro. I'm not going to lie. This also probably feels like a really big pro right now because I'm recording this episode in April. But I digress. Pros for your own website. You own it, and you are in control of it. Goes without saying. Another pro is that you can gather contact information with permission from your customers, which in turn provides you with security should the wild world of the internet and the algorithms ever change. More than likely, even if your website goes down, you probably will always still be able to send an email in some form, and you can contact your customers. And another pro of having your own website, your customers only experience your brand. That means over the long term, hopefully they will remember you. That also means you can set up the experience of your brand to reflect whatever you want it to. Do you make pottery because it slows down the frenetic pace of life, and you want customers who agree with a slower pace philosophy? On your own website, you can curate an experience that is all about that slowness, including even something like the speed of your shipping times. The experience a consumer has of your Etsy shop is the experience of Etsy, not you. And curating an experience can go really far in bringing you the right type of customers for your brand specifically. For example, on my wedding photography website, I had an FAQs, frequently asked questions page that answered some, of course, obviously, frequently asked questions, popular questions, but also was a place where I could include questions I wanted my clients to consider. I wanted them to identify with certain values I was describing in the questions that I was mentioning. If they don't identify with that stuff after reading it, they probably aren't going to fill out the contact form and inquire about my services. And that's great! As a small business, I didn't have the capacity or the ability or the desire to respond to thousands of messages every day or even every week. I only wanted to hear from the people that I would be excited to work with. So on our own website, we can create a sort of funnel where people can self-select and choose whether or not they are our people. And then when you do receive a message, the odds of them being your ideal customer are a lot greater. But that's a whole different conversation, so let's make sure we get into the cons of both Etsy and your own website. Etsy con number one, you can't directly gather customers' email addresses or contact information. Now, this is a huge con because for any future business growth, you are stuck with staying within the Etsy ecosystem. Another downside of Etsy is that to gain meaningful traction, you mostly have to play by their rules. Yes, this means things like including free shipping or keeping a star seller rating. Now, let's be honest, free shipping for most of us just means we've factored in the cost of it into the price of our piece. Or that's what you should be doing. Etsy pretty clearly states what they prioritize in ranking listings. And it's going to be really hard to get any of those eyeballs for the 97 million buyers to see your work if you aren't using at least the majority of the features Etsy prioritizes. Now, I will say this. This is a big con because I personally am not actually afraid of a negative review. Because I know that since I can respond to any review publicly, I can have the opportunity to showcase to future customers how professionally we handle things if something doesn't go to plan. And or potentially politely and gently point out when someone is being unreasonable. However, because of Etsy's darn algorithm, in order for us to keep the super ridiculous star seller listing or best seller in the delineation of a specific item, we have to keep the reviews and the ratings above a 4.8 out of 5. Now, once you have a meaningful number of reviews coming in every month, this is not as big of a deal. But if, like us, you maybe only get 5 reviews per month or 10, getting one bad one or one less than perfect one, well, it has an outsized effect. So it gives the occasional unhinged shopper way too much power, in my personal opinion. But that's a conversation to be had over perhaps a strong beverage another time. Let's go on to the cons of using your own website. You own it and are in control. Now, you might be thinking, wait, hold on a second, Rebecca, you listed that as a pro. Yep, I did. It's also a con, because it means that you have to do everything. You have to figure out any tech issues it might have. You have to figure out sales tax. Yeah, there's a lot of work to be done. Another downside of your own website is that there is zero audience there until you start putting in the work to send people to it. This was exactly the reason we started with both Etsy and our own website. As two self-employed individuals, we needed a certain amount of income coming in as quickly as possible. Because as you all know, if you have listened to any other episode of the podcast, there is no other salary providing the healthcare. We are actively working on growing the traffic to our own website, of course, but the audience size is definitely not sustainable yet for a full salary, let alone two. While not entirely filling the gap, Etsy currently provides a certain amount of stability, as we have been able to get listings ranking faster than we've been able to grow our own audience. The point of all these pros and cons, and in fact the point of this entire episode, is to emphasize the importance of using platforms for what they are built for. There's no changing the Etsy algorithm. Do a bunch of Etsy's business practices annoy the crap out of me? Of course. But now that they're a publicly traded company, do I expect that their shareholders are going to care? Absolutely not. I'm sorry, but I'm gonna give you all a bit of tough love. Every time I see an independent artist and maker take to the internet with their pitchforks and their torches, raging against yet another algorithm change to Etsy or Instagram or whatever other platform is out there, I can't help but think they've forgotten what the platform is for. Yes, over a decade ago, Etsy was a beautiful haven of actually handmade work, and a lot of people were able to grow their businesses through it. But at the end of the day, it was still rented property. And the tough love part of this is that it's a waste of energy getting nostalgic and being frustrated that things changed. Change, my maker friends, will always happen. And I know it's exhausting, but the tech companies will always choose whatever is in their best interest. And their best interest isn't necessarily always what we prefer or what feels the easiest for us. But that doesn't mean that you can't learn how it is that these platforms are built to work and make them work for you in a way that's sustainable for you. We have very clear policies and boundaries on Etsy. Frankly, before we had the policies written out in every listing, I was known to potentially find myself approaching a panic attack, literally, after receiving a customer message. It wasn't great. So I do highly recommend strict policies, because then you can always tell someone that you're making an exception for them and they'll feel better. But anyway, now, while we are still playing the game of Etsy, we are playing their game within our boundaries. Exactly the same way I do with Instagram. You have never seen me dance or lip sync on Instagram. I also don't even post every single day. I don't post reels all that often, with the exception of what we record on the podcast, because those are really easy to make. I have learned what the platform is built to do, and I'm using it to my advantage, but in my own manageable, sustainable way. And at the end of the day, it's all about weighing the pros and cons. it's not a question of good or bad, right or wrong, despite what those giant Facebook groups make it feel like. It is about deciding what is right for you at this moment in your life and in the life of your business. And I really hope that this discussion of pros and cons helps you make that decision for yourself. If you do find that you're still overwhelmed by all of it, you know where to find the deeper conversation with a group of kind, supportive, compassionate makers who, I can promise you, have never gotten into a heated argument in the comments section. I am talking about the community, of course, our virtual home for makers from all over the world trying to figure all this stuff out right along with you. These decisions aren't easy, and frankly, they require conversations that have the space and the time and maybe the expectation of nuance. And since the community is not part of any social media platform, it is exactly the place where we can all actually have nuanced conversations. Happening inside the community only next week on April 25th at 3 p.m. Central, but also recorded only for community members because 3 p.m. Central, while not 4 a.m. in Australia, is still pretty early morning. Anyway, to the point, happening next week is an Instagram masterclass specifically for makers and independent artists with the one and only database strategist, Allie Mason, who, if you missed last week's episode, she's the guest, so go back and listen to that episode right now. There are a ton of amazing gems in there to help understand what the heck Instagram as a platform is built to do. Now, the cost of this masterclass, and frankly, all of our quarterly masterclasses, is included with the price of our community membership. It's pretty awesome math, if I do say so myself. You can learn more about all of the membership perks by visiting makersplaybook.com/community. Once again, this episode was made possible in part thanks to our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by the Rosenfield Collection of Functional Ceramic Art. The collection exists as an online source for research and inspiration, featuring photos of objects made by over 1,000 artists. The images are high quality and can be used with no permission required, making them a great source for students and teachers. To find out more, visit www.rosenfieldcollection.com. This episode is also sponsored by the Archie Bray Clay Business, home of Bray Patch, a ceramic patching material that is best used for filling cracks and bonding breaks. Bray Patch can be applied to either green or bisqueware and fired up to cone 10. It fires paper white, but can be tinted using your chosen clay body and be covered by opaque glazer slip. Order anytime online at archiebrayclay.com. Audio post-production of this podcast is made possible by help from Christy Kotzfan, with promotional material assistance from Queenie Maliki. The Maker's Playbook podcast is recorded on the original homelands of the Potawatomi, Ho-Chunk, and Menominee people. We're the people of Wisconsin Sovereign, Anishinaabe, Ho-Chunk, Menominee, Oneida, and Mohican Nations remain present. Until next time, my friends, go get back to making your dreams a reality. Because together, we've got this.
This podcast is a production of the Brickyard Network, an extension of the Archie Bray Foundation for the Ceramic Arts. To find out more about our lineup of ceramic podcasts, visit brickyardnetwork.org.